With the defeat of Sauron at the end of the Second Age, the kingdoms of Arnor and Gondor are free to carry on the legacy and culture of the lost island of Numenor. Yet from the beginning of the Third Age, mysterious invaders from the east constantly threaten their peace, and power struggles and expeditionary dreams tempt their leaders. What became of Arnor? What was the early history of Gondor like? Join us as we explore the first millennium of the Third Age. The Tolkien Road, Episode 204, The Lord of the Rings, History of the Third Age, Part 2. Hello everyone, welcome to The Tolkien Road, Episode 204, The Lord of the Rings, History of the Third Age, Part 2. Greta?
Hey.
Audio of the intro music a little better for you this week?
Yes.
A little more tolerable.
And not that last week was intolerable, but this is easier on the ears.
Yeah, it was pretty
loud.
If
you know what I mean.
It was pretty loud for us.
It was loud.
I did turn it down in the mix for those listening at home. But it's not the worst thing.
It's not.
Grooving.
And you know, having had a drummer in the house for the last several years, you'd think I'd be able to take the noise.
Yeah, well, that's true, but he's not normally like playing drums like right in your
ear.
So
that is true.
Yeah.
Good point.
Well, yeah, welcome to episode 204, everyone. Glad you're joining us on this episode as we continue our journey through the history of the Third Age. Let's begin by giving a shout out to our Patreon supporters and especially our newest patrons, Henry B., Jules, and Jonathan L.
Ooh, thanks, guys.
Thank you all for pledging your support
your
to
patronage.
The podcast.
We
absolutely
appreciate your patronage.
We love to be patronized.
Yes.
We absolutely love to be patronized. So, also thanks, shout out to a current patron, Katie W., who boosted her support.
Ooh,
so
awesome sauce.
That's, of course, always an option for people, too.
Thank you, Katie.
And I encourage everybody to support us on Patreon. Head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out all of the details. And I wanted to give a shout-out to a listener who left us a generous one-time donation via Tip Jar, that little leave-a-tip button that's on every episode, that's on the episode page. You'll find it on the episode page for this episode. They left us a very generous donation via that Tip Jar app on our website. So really appreciate that from JD. I would say their first name, but I'm not 100% sure if it's so. It's JAN, and I'm not sure if it's the European pronunciation, like Jan or John or something like that, right? Or if it's like Jan, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, and I don't want to butcher, but it may be one of those two. But so I'll refer to them as JD and just say thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right. Jinx.
Yep. I said it first. You owe me a Coke.
Oh, man. All right. Also, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. Last but certainly not least, well, kind of least, but still importantly, please subscribe to our feed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right on.
Where's our feed?
Well, you know, like in your podcast app, subscribe to our podcast.
Oh,
right?
Subscribe to the podcast.
Yeah, maybe I'm getting a little too technical with my lingo there.
Yeah.
Wherever
you know,
it is.
When I hear the word feed, I just think of food.
Yes.
Because I'm not techie like that.
You're a veritable hobbit.
I am. It's true.
Think of food. Any opportunity.
I do love food.
All right. So on this episode, we're continuing our deep dive into the history of the Third Age. And this time we'll be looking at the major events of the first millennium of the Third Age with a little look back at the last few decades of the Second Age. Sound good, Greta?
Sure. Yeah. Count me in.
Right on.
Cool.
But before we jump in, we got a little give us our weekly update on the Tolkien news out there. So, unfortunately, no Latron Prime news. No news about the Amazon TV show for Lord of the Rings. We'll just choose to continue to be encouraged by that they're taking so long to let us hear anything. because they're just getting their act together and making sure they nail it. So,
right. Like they're too busy. They're so focused
on making it
on
awesome,
getting the show right.
Yeah.
And yeah, blowing it out of the water that they just don't have time.
And they're not going to tell us anything until it's like the
perfect.
Greatest thing ever.
Perfect.
So
yeah.
Until Tolkien himself would be proud of this.
I think that's a good mindset to have right now.
Yes. And he'd be like, you have captured everything I ever wanted to say about the Second Age and more.
And more.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll just think that that's how things are going.
They're working so hard that they're literally not going to be satisfied with putting this show out there until they receive an apparition of J.R.R. Tolkien himself confirming that he approves of this.
Okay.
That's how I'm choosing to view all this.
All right.
So
I'm down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Right on. Also, but there was this cool little thing that I found via theonering.net. This is join the Tolkien Fandom Oral History Project. So this sounds kind of neat. So basically, let me pull this article up here. Slow internet. All right. So there's this Tolkien Fandom Oral History Project that's being spearheaded by one William Fliss, the archivist in the Department of Special Collections and University Archives of the Raynor Memorial Library at Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's a mouthful.
That is a mouthful.
William Fliss is wondering, when did you first encounter the works of J.R.R. Tolkien? Number two, why are you a Tolkien fan? And number three, what has he meant to you? And the goal of this project is to gather 6,000 oral interviews, which I don't think will be a challenge because there's so many Tolkien fans out there. Oral interviews based on these questions from Tolkien enthusiasts like us. So I will link to this. There's several links in this and much more information, so I will link to this in the show notes. And I highly encourage you all to go over and check it out.
So I'm assuming the article gives details on how you can participate in this.
Yes, it does. It has links to how you can participate in it. So
okay.
It was posted on August 11th, which was 3 days ago as we're mm-hmm. recording.
Yep.
So I don't know. You might need to act fast on this if you want to be included in the 6,000 oral interviews here, because there's a whole lot of Tolkien fans out there. So who probably want to answer these questions.
It would be kind of cool to see if we could get this guy on the podcast.
Yeah, I kind of thought
about
that.
Spearheading this project.
I thought about maybe trying to do that and hear from him. So maybe we will.
I think we should. I think it's a sign that we should.
Okay.
That we both had the thought.
Right on.
Cool.
Cool. Okay. So that is all of the news. So Greta, I think we're ready to dive into the topic for this week.
Perfect. I'll put on my goggles.
Let's do it.
My scuba mask and my oxygen tank. And we'll dive in.
All right. Okay, so on the last episode, we talked about the overarching themes of the Third Age. The fact that it's 3,000 years of history and where we are really at the beginning of it all. So on this episode, we're going to talk about the timeline of the first millennium of the Third Age. But all that to say, like, it really begins at the end of the Second Age, all right? So the Third Age, really, the themes, the stories begin at the end of the Second Age.
Okay.
If you hit rewind, mm-hmm. if you go back a couple of pages there in your book, actually just one page, and you look there at the year 3319, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ar-Pharazôn assails Valinor, downfall of Numenor. Elendil and his sons escape, right? The end of Numenor, right?
Mm-hmm.
The big themes of the Third Age begin with the fall of Numenor. Now, you see right after that, 3320, that the realms in exile are founded, Arnor and Gondor. The stones, meaning the Palantir, are divided, and Sauron returns to Mordor, okay? And then the last few bullets there, the last few numbers in the timeline refer to the war, the Sauron's basically last stand, right? Sauron's last stand against the last alliance of elves and men. So, of course, we know that Sauron is defeated. He slays He manages to slay Elendil and Gil-galad, but Isildur, the son of Elendil, takes the One Ring. And then Sauron passes away, and the ring wraiths go into the shadows, and that's the end of the Second Age, official 3441, the end of the Second Age. So, as we noted on the last episode, Gondor and Arnor exist for about 120 years before the end of the Second Age.
Right.
But now that Sauron's gone, everything seems like it's going to be happy and hunky-dory and peaceful again.
Yeah, right? You can.
Yeah. So, of course, we know that doesn't really happen. Because in year two, right after planting a seedling of the white tree, remember, deep dive topic we want to do eventually, right after planting a seedling of the white tree in Minas Anor and delivering the South Kingdom of Gondor to Meneldil, who is the son of Anarion, Isildur's brother, Isildur departs to go to the north and he takes the ring with him, right? Sauron's ring. And that's when the disaster of the Gladden Fields happens, and Isildur and his three elder sons are slain.
Is that what the one of the movies opens with that scene, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With the disaster,
Fellowship of the Ring
opens. Okay, yeah. With a disaster of the Gladden Fields.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's where that's where Isildur is slain.
Right. Yeah, and there's actually a whole chapter in Unfinished Tales that talks about the disaster of the Gladden Fields. That we'll get to sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So,
if only he hadn't brought the ring with him.
Yeah, man, that ring, it'll do it to you. You think he would have learned?
You like to think so.
Yeah, it's almost like he hasn't read Lord of the Rings.
Right?
So.
Oh, man.
Otar, year three. Otar brings the shards of Narsil to Imladris. And remember, I think Narsil was the sword of Elendil that was shattered, and then Isildur picks up the remnant of it and chops off Sauron's ring, or chops off Sauron's finger or hand or something like that. It was forged during the First Age by the famed dwarven smith Telkar of Nogrod. And it was the sword of King Elendil of the Dunedain. And let's see here. Let's get this right. I'm looking at Tolkien Gateway here on the fly. Elendil carried Narsil in the Battle of Dagorlad, where it shone with the light of the sun and moon, and then in the Siege of Barad-dûr. But Sauron killed him, and the sword broke into two pieces under him as he fell, and its light was extinguished. Elendil's son Isildur took up the sword and used its shard to cut the One Ring from the hand of Sauron. There you go. And then he takes the swords home. He takes the shards home with him. So.
Who does?
Isildur. Well, Isildur takes it, and then he gets killed, and then Otar, who is Isildur's squire, basically Isildur's right-hand man, right, his most trusted servant, takes the shards of Narsil. Otar manages to escape from the disaster of the Gladden Fields with the shards of Narsil and takes them to Imladris.
So Isildur takes the ring, like the one of the three rings, with him. Is that correct?
No, he takes the One Ring. He takes Sauron's ring.
Okay, he takes Sauron's ring as a result of the disaster.
Right.
Okay. My brain. Now got it. Because I was wondering, I was like, because you said... Anyway, it's not worth explaining. Okay, right. So yeah, it's the scene at the beginning of Fellowship where he cuts off...
I'm just going to say we might need to go back and edit that part.
Okay. That's fine. You got skills. You can do that.
I'm just going to leave it in there. There's no reason to do
that. All right. So, yes, that's where Isildur, instead of destroying the ring, he takes it.
Yes.
He takes the ring. Right.
You got it.
But then he dies, and the ring falls into the water.
Right.
It is lost until Sméagol finds it.
Yeah.
So it's lost for a good amount of time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, let's see here. I'll just fast forward and say that it's not until, on the timeline, it is in the year 2463 that it says, about this time, Dagol the Store finds the One Ring and is murdered by Sméagol.
When was that?
2463. So this is like 20...
Of the Third Age.
2,460 years later.
Wow. So yeah, it was gone. It was lost for a long time.
Yeah.
Just floating in the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder it was so clean when Schmeagol picked it up. Or, no. Schmeagol didn't find it.
Daigle found it. Yeah.
Yep.
And then Schmeagol murdered him
for it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. But it wasn't rusted at all.
I feel like if I ever get two dogs again, I'm going to name them Daigle and Schmeagol.
You should. I thought it was Schmeagol.
Whatever, Schmeagol.
Daigle and Schmeagol. But we're not getting two dogs. So don't spend too much time trying to figure it out.
That was just a completely random thing to say. All right. Year 10, moving along. So Valandil becomes king of Arnor, and Valandil is the youngest son of Isildur, the only surviving son of Isildur. So, yeah, youngest son of Isildur and third king of Arnor. So, okay. It's year 10 that he becomes the king.
Okay.
And again, let's just talk about Arnor for a second, because I don't think we covered where this is. So,
no, we haven't.
Everybody has an idea of where Gondor is, right?
It's in
Gondor.
The north.
What?
The north.
Gondor?
Not the south. I have no sense of direction.
You need to let me say it before you jump in and say it.
Okay, I was so confident. Sorry. Well, at least it was me that said it.
It's relatively north of some places.
That's what I meant, actually.
It's north of South Gondor.
It's north of South Gondor.
It's north of Harad, the Sutherland.
Yeah. See, you didn't let me finish my thought.
But in comparing Arnor and Gondor...
Arnor's in the north.
Yes.
Yes. See, I got them mixed up.
Yeah, now that you're looking at the map.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, everybody knows where Gondor is.
Now I do.
And it's right there, you know, usually on the south of the maps that you look at for Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
Right next door, knocking on Mordor's door. And then Arnor is the big expanse to the north where you might realize, oh, that is, like, where the Shire is, right? So the Shire is, you know, right here, Greta. We're looking at the map. I'm actually looking at the Lord of the Rings Project interactive map here, so I'll try to put that into the show notes. Great little resource here if you're looking on the internet. But Arnor is up here to the north. It's so, for those of you listening and not readily, you can't look at a map right now, just think about where the Shire is on a map, or think about where Rivendell is. And Rivendell is like on the eastern extremity, like Arnor's eastern border is basically the north portion of the Misty Mountains. Its western border is the Arid Luin, right? The Blue Mountains. And then its southern border is kind of that road, right? Out of that road between the Shire and Rivendell, right? So it truly is a pretty northern kingdom.
Right.
And yeah. So that's the kingdom there that Valandil, that, you know, Elendil had been the first king of, and Valandil comes back to it. And, you know, my understanding is that Arnor is really kind of, I mean, you think about if Elendil was the king and, you know, of Arnor, and he was really the high king of Numenor after Numenor was lost, then Arnor must have been the more powerful of the two kingdoms, right? It must have been the more kind of important of the two kingdoms.
Right, you would think so.
Which is really interesting to think about, that Gondor was kind of maybe a little bit second fiddle to Gondor. And that might have to do with the fact that Arnor was so far from Mordor, right? So Gondor was a little bit more of like the, you know, the buffer kingdom, and Arnor was the, you know, was the one where that could maybe thrive and flourish a little more.
Yeah, but then that's weird that we don't know that Arnor is not really a player.
I know.
Later in the timeline.
Yeah, and we're going to do some, I mean, we'll go through, we'll learn a lot about Arnor's history just by going through this timeline, but we're going to learn a lot about, we'll probably at some point do a couple episodes worth of deep dive on Arnor itself.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a fascinating, it's one that's fascinated me for a long time, is just wanting to learn more. And it's almost like the reason I wanted to do this was because I just wanted to learn more about that northern kingdom, because it's like it existed up there and it apparently was like glorious in many ways. It had that Numenorean glory, but we know like nothing about it, you know, relatively little about it.
Yeah.
There are little hints of like ruins and that kind of thing and, you know, ancient history when it comes to reading The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, but you never really learned a lot about it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
In those stories.
Yeah. So that'll be a good deep dive topic.
You know much more about Gondor than you do about Arnor, typically.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it will be a good deep dive topic. All right, back to the timeline here. So, Oh, by the way, another thing to note, Arnor, the capital of Arnor was Annúminas, right? And it was on the shores of Lake Evendim. So if you look up, if you look just kind of north-northwest of the Shire, there's this lake nestled between some hills up there called Lake Evendim, and that's where Annúminas, which was the capital city of Arnor, was, right?
Okay.
No longer exists by the time of The Hobbit. So, all right, moving along, we got 109. Elrond finally gets married, Middle-earth's most eligible bachelor.
Yeah, right.
Finally ties the knot. Sorry, ladies. So, yeah, he's, you know, he's happy that Sauron's gone, I guess, and it's time to get married.
Yeah.
So he gets married. He marries Celebrion, who is the daughter of Celeborn and Galadriel. So
it's pretty, pretty eligible bachelorette.
Yeah, for reals.
Yeah.
So, and then just a mere 21 years later, their sons Eladon and Elrohir are born.
Okay.
And then Arwen is born in 241, so 111 years between their sons and their daughter. So that's what I was talking about with the elves. Yeah. Like, you know, they don't reproduce as quickly, it would seem.
Hmm. It would seem that way. Yeah.
So
111 years between siblings.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
420. King Ostoher rebuilds Minas Anor. So Minas Anor, of course, I mentioned this in the last episode. Minas Anor is the original name of what we commonly refer to as Minas Tirith, right? Minas Tirith, the great Gondorian city of Lord of the Rings, was originally called Minas Anor, which Minas Anor means the Tower of the Sun. All right, so you had the Tower of the Sun, and you have Minas Ithil, which is known as Minas Morgul by the time of Lord of the Rings, and that was the Minas Ithil means the Tower of the Moon. So you had the Tower of the Moon on the east and the Tower of the Sun in the west. And
they're both in Gondor.
Right. They're both Gondorian cities. Minas Tirith means the Tower of the Guard. And so that's the, you know, that was the reason for the name change, but we'll get more into that later episode. So what's the significance of this particular event? Well, let's look up what King Ostoher is all about. I believe I'm saying his name correctly. He was the seventh king of Gondor, and he really started to make Minas Anor more of an important, you know, more of kind of maybe the center of Gondorian life. I think the significance of this is that you see this thing where it's got, even in Gondor, like they're starting to kind of settle into this kind of peaceful mindset, right? That they're no longer, they don't really, you know, it's 490 years in or 420 years in, and there's no notes in the timeline about any problems with anybody, right? Any wars or anything. So they're like, maybe we can finally have some peace, right? So he, like, it says he sets up a summer residence, right?
His summer home.
So, nice. You know, taking it easy. Of course, moving on 70 years, he gets about 70 years of peace, and then the Easterlings invade. The first invasion of the Easterlings. The Easterlings were men from the East, quite simply put, right? So you think about...
Which would be where on the map? Or like what region are we talking about?
On the eastern side of the map.
Right, so it's to the right. Yeah, yes. Okay. So what kind of people are these? Like where do they hail from?
That's a good question, and I'd like to explore that. Uh-huh. We don't really know based on the timeline.
Okay. This somewhere east of Gondor.
Like, yeah, really way far to the east. I mean, this is not what it is, but I almost kind of think of this as like, I mean, they're coming from so far away that it's almost like when the Mongols invaded Europe, right?
Oh. Okay.
And, you know, they were from like all the way across Asia, right? And it's this vast expansive empire came all the way over here, and people in Europe must have just been like, where are these people from?
Yeah. You know? Like, why do they look so different than us?
Yeah. There's some different names that the Easterlings fall under, but the important thing is that this is really the first difficulty that Gondor or Arnor has had to deal with in a very long time. So these people come in from the east. I will say this. It does seem that they were... people that were kind of dominated by Sauron in the Second Age. Like, they were men that were dominated by Sauron in the Second Age.
Okay, okay.
So they were really taught kind of like, you know, kind of ways of like civilization that are about, that are more about like domination and that kind of thing, you know, because, gotcha, because of, okay, Sauron being their, yeah, their teacher. Right.
Okay.
So, but yeah, we, you know, not a whole lot to say about that other than just like, that's something that happens. The first invasion of the Easterlings. 500, Romendacil the first defeats the Easterlings. But then 41 years later, he's slain in battle. So there's a sense of like, there's a lot of war going on now, right? That there's, that just when Gondor thought that things were going to be peaceful and nice for a long time, all of a sudden things are, you know, 51 years of war is what it would seem like, right?
Was he a king?
Yes, Romendacil was the, I believe he was the son of Ostoher.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so a little bit more about Romendacil. Let's see. Due to his father's age in 490, so he went by, he was born as Tarostar, and Romendacil, what does that mean? Yeah, I don't see it. So he was also known by Rome. Oh, East Victor is what it is. So due to his father's age, Tarostar led the forces that would drive the invaders out after his victory in Third Age 500, 8 years after he had succeeded his father. Tarostar assumed the name Romendacil, East Victor. So, by the way, guys, just a, I'm going to say this now, but, you know, unless I mention otherwise, I'm getting a lot of the amplifying information just from clicking through to Tolkien Gateway. So big shout out to that website and all the people that put in a lot of hard work to getting, you know, articles fleshed out over there, because there's vast amounts of good info over there. And you can also find like sources for some of this, you know, some of the more obscure points over there too. So yeah, so we have King Ostoher seems like kind of peaceful, and then Romendacil, has his son, has to be, you know, has to get back to war, right? But anyway, Romendacil defeats the Easterlings, but is eventually slain in battle. We jump forward to the year 830, so we skip about 300 years, and I'm not sure what happened in those 300 years, but 830, Falastor begins the line of the Ship Kings of Gondor. So this is interesting, because if you remember our discussion of Numenor, especially reading Anarion, Aldarion and Arrendis, right?
The Mariner's Wife.
Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. The whole thing with Aldarion was that he was this ship king, right?
Right, right.
And he was kind of the beginning of the Numenoreans transiting back over to Middle Earth and starting to have, to establish relationships and with the peoples of Middle Earth and colony and like colonize some places and that kind of thing. So, and one of the reflections we had in that story was that was almost like a beginning of the trouble coming to Numenor, right? Because they were, things started to get a little imperial from that point on. And eventually what started out as kind of like peaceful, you know, a kind of a peaceful back and forth between Numenor and the peoples of Middle Earth because of the ship, you know, the ship going and all that sort of thing, eventually became wars and domination, and, you know, it became more about like commerce and making money and all these sorts of things, right?
Yeah.
So, and really, maybe that was the beginning of the end for Numenor.
Interesting.
Right.
It was this element
of corruption that entered into it. So I think that's the significance of calling out this line of ship kings.
So would Falastor be, he's basically a descendant of Arendil or not? Because it says he begins the line. Right? But how can he have begun it if... Do you know what I'm trying to ask?
Well, I think he's just... So, I think the point is that he started seagoing again, right? Like he...
Let's read
a little bit about him.
Okay.
All right. It says he was the 12th king of Gondor. Again, Tolkien Gateway. Taranon Falastor was his name. Taranon was captain of the hosts and the first of the ship's kings of Gondor, who extended the realm far along the shores west and south of the Ithir Anduin.
Ship kings of Gondor.
Right. So you remember that Gondor is right next to the Anduin, right? Mm-hmm. And the Anduin, and not far from where the Anduin kind of pours out into the sea, right?
Right, right, right.
And then, but the realm of Gondor really extends all the way down to the sea in multiple different places. So I think what this is trying to allude to is that they started to become focused on, let's go do some sea journeying up and down the coasts, and they established trade routes and that kind of thing, and, you know, and it's after this that the South Kingdoms or the South regions are going to start to come into play.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. So let's see. One other interesting note that I found in this article. Let me say this. He says he extended the realm far along the shores west and south of the Ithir Anduin, commemorating his victories, which would make it seem like maybe he did that by the sword. Taranon assumed the name Falistor when he took the crown. Taranon was also famous for his queen, the nefarious, solitary, and loveless Beruthiel. Taranon had built a house downstream of Pelargir that rested upon arches sunk into the waters of the Ithir Anduin, but the queen refused to live within the sound and smell of the sea. She lived in the king's house in Osgiliath, where she owned cats said to be able to spy upon men. Eventually, Taranon replaced her upon a boat cast adrift at sea. He was then the first king to die without an heir, and was succeeded by his nephew, the second of the ship kings, Yarnil the First. So that's kind of brutal.
That is brutal. That's actually, like, that's really interesting. I mean, that's very reminiscent of the Arendelle and...
Yeah.
Arendis, right?
Yeah, Anarion and Arendis.
Anarion and Arendis. They, because, yeah, she refused to live by the sea, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, totes.
But cats that can spy upon men. I think we own one of those cats. I think we own a descendant of one of those cats.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that might... I got to look and see if there's more to that story, because that might be a fun one to do a deep dive on.
That would be. It's very... They had a very tumultuous relationship.
Seriously,
as well.
That's... you know, at least Anarion and Arendis, like, tried to work it out.
Right.
You know, like, for a long time. Like, eventually, well, Taranon placed her upon a boat, cast adrift at sea. It's like, done with you, woman.
Done with you. Although, she could have, like, depending on where the boat drifted to, it wasn't necessarily a death sentence.
But she hated the sea. That's...
Well, yeah, but she could have eventually found land and survived.
Well, do you think that he intended for that to happen?
No. Okay. I'm saying it could have happened. Right?
Well, I'm not... But what I'm saying is that it doesn't...
Or maybe a rescue boat found her or something. The Coast Guard was called in.
The Gondorian Coast Guard.
Gondorian Coast Guard.
Yeah, well, that's...
Anyway, it wasn't nice. Like, I'm not trying to condone Falistor's actions.
Like, drifting out to sea, like, you're not very nice!
You meanie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty dramatic, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Huh.
He is succeeded by... He has no heir, so he's succeeded by...
Because he killed his
nephew,
wife.
The second of the ship kings, Yarnil the First. Let's click on this ship kings thing. The ship kings was a title given to the great king Taranon, Falistor, and his three successors. The ship kings did much to expand Gondor's naval and military might. Between them, they enormously extended the South Kingdom's control over the southern lands of Middle-earth, including the lands west of the mouths of Anduin, and as far south as Umbar and the Harad. Their influence was such that, at the end of the reign of Hjarmendasil I, Gondor had reached a peak of strength and power that it would never again surpass. Wow, this map kind of shows how big their kingdom was. That's pretty, pretty massive. Wow.
Yeah, it's quite large.
Extends, wow, way over into the east, way down into the south. So, very cool. And then in 861, we have the division of Arnor. So, we've been talking a lot about Gondor, but it would seem that Arnor was kind of in a relatively peaceful place for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden in 861, after, I guess, 860 years of peace, and the kingdom divides. The kingdom divides into three kingdoms. The king at the time is Yarendur, and I think he's the 10th king, although I feel like I saw that maybe that wasn't right. Let's see here. It says, okay, he was the 10th and last king of Arnor. So Yarnor has three sons, and these three sons basically all want to be king. And mm-hmm. only one of them is rightfully king.
The oldest.
Right. But in order to, I guess, not kill each other, they divide the kingdom of Arnor into three separate kingdoms.
That's large enough. That seems like a good solution.
I want my kingdom, Dad.
Right.
So, let me read a little bit about this history. Yarendur succeeded his father Elendur on his death in Third Age 7777. Yarendur's rule was uneventful, but he was the 10th and last king of Arnor due to dissension amongst his sons. After his death in 861, probably due to jealousy on the part of the two younger sons, his three sons split Arnor into three separate kingdoms, Arthedain, Cardolan, and Rhudaur. His eldest son and rightful heir, Amleith of Fornost, became the first king of Arthedain, and it was through Amleith and his heirs that the line of Isildur endured whilst the line of kings of Rhudaur and Cardolan failed. Aragorn II was a direct descendant of Amleith, and it wasn't until Aragorn became king that Arnor was finally reunified.
Hmm.
So, it's interesting because I'm not sure that it's not reunified at a different time before that, briefly. But it's definitely not what it was, you know. So 861 seems to be kind of this big turning point for Arnor. Now, as far as those three kingdoms it was divided into, Arthedain is, I believe it's like the... Arthedain lay primarily between the Hun and the Lune and the Brandywine in northwestern Eriador. However, it also claimed the lands north of the East Road from the Brandywine Bridge to the Weather Hills. So this is like the western portion of Arnor, I believe. Let's see here. Can we see on the map? Can we see it on the map? Arthedain, there we go. Yeah, so Arthedain is like that, was the western portion of the kingdom. Whereas Rhudaur is over near Imladris, right, over near Rivendell. So it's like the far eastern portion. And then I'm guessing that the Cardolan is like the central, is like this, I'm sorry, it's actually the, it's, whoa, it's, okay, so Arnor actually extended a little further south than that road, than that east road. So Cardolan is the area down to the south. So Cardolan is in the south of Arnor. Rhudaur is in the east, and Arthedain is in the west. So,
okay.
But you know, it's usually a sign of decadence when a great kingdom decides to split up into three kingdoms because its rulers want more power. You know, because there's mm-hmm. just, you know.
So it's not surprising.
There's a fight over who gets to,
right?
You know, why should he have all the power, mm-hmm. right? You know.
So you're saying you're not surprised that Arnor didn't survive much longer after this.
Yeah, well,
it's kind of the beginning of the end.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, like, the, you know,
just the dynamics.
I mean, I think about like that happened in you know, in ancient history a lot, right? You have like with Rome, right? You had Rome split into west and east,
right? Yep.
You know, you had Israel in ancient times split into north and south.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like Greece was split at one point. The Greek Empire was split at one point. And I'm sure, you know, other parts of world history, like, you can go back and look and see, like, big kingdoms, as soon as it became big and powerful, it split into three or four different parts, right? So.
It doesn't usually end well.
Usually it's the beginning of worse things to come.
Yeah, and that makes sense, right? Because a kingdom divided, or isn't there
shall not stand.
Right? Yeah, that's like who said that? Like Lincoln or somebody?
I think a house divided.
A house divided.
Cannot stand.
Yeah.
I think Lincoln said that.
Yeah. Which makes sense, because if all of a sudden you go from one foundation to multiple, I mean, it's just not going to be as strong.
I feel like that's one of those things, and I'm going to find out that we like really butchered it somehow and made it sound really funny in an ironic way. It's like, it sounds like something that like Michael Scott would say, like, a house divided cannot stand.
Cannot stand.
And then he's like attributes it to like the completely wrong person or something.
Right. How the turntables have turned.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, I think that is a good stopping point for the first millennium. Even though it's not technically at the end of the first millennium yet, we did actually begin 120 years with 120 years left to go in the second age. So, you know, if you do the math, 120 plus 861, it's like 981. I mean, that's pretty close to a millennium. thou.
If you round up.
That's close to a thou.
That's close to, definitely close to a thou. Yeah.
All right.
Close enough, anyway.
Good stuff. Okay, everybody. We've had a ton of great correspondence recently, and we actually recorded responses to a couple of items for this episode, but unfortunately, my own responses were a total bumbling mess. So we decided to cut that from this week's episode, and we'll try to hit those items and more on episode 205. We'd love to hear from all of you listeners. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com. You can also go through the website, the contact form on the website, or the comments, as well as Facebook and Twitter. On the next episode, we'll be continuing our discussion of the history of Middle-earth, hitting on the second millennium. Sound good? Greta?
Yes.
Right on.
Yeah.
Okay.
What am I supposed to say? What
no.
if I said no? Would you like scrap it and just do something totally different?
Nope. I'd be like, deal with it.
Well then.
The sunglasses would fall down on my head.
Slowly fall down on your face.
Float down onto my face and I'd say deal with it.
And then you drop the mic and walk away.
That's right.
Okay.
Not before thanking our patrons, though.
Of course not.
And especially our $5 patrons.
Yes.
Jules.
Joey S.
Eric S.
Jonathan D.
Daniel.
David B.
Teresa C.
Ish of the Hammer.
Asia V.
Chuck F.
Chris L.
James L.
James A.
Zeke F.
Emilio P.
Brian O.
And Shannon S.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all very much, and we will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye, everybody.